Thanks, Jonathan. Good morning. In a small town in rural America, a young Australian was in the wrong place at the wrong time through no fault of his own. His name was Chris Lane. It was August 2013 and the baseballer had gone for a jog when he was shot in the back. Our North America correspondent Michael Vincent has been to the town of Duncan in Oklahoma three times to cover the arrest, arraignment and now the trial of the teenagers accused of killing the young Australian. This time he met the family of Chris Lane, who travelled to Duncan for the trial, where they finally got a guilty verdict, with the killer never to be released from jail.
Trying to make sense of the senseless. That's how I felt the first time I came to Duncan, Oklahoma. Back then, in mid-August 2013, I met Sarah Harper, Chris Lane's girlfriend, shared time with her family, and went to his memorial at the site he died. The young Australian's car was still in the family's driveway. A star had fallen from the Southern Cross sticker on the side window. All the gifts in Australiana the young couple had brought back from a holiday down under had barely been unpacked. They'd been together almost 4 years, and he was 2 weeks shy of his 23rd birthday. It was, and still is, just so awful. Many of the questions I had back then remain. How did three teenagers, 15, 16 and 17 years old, get a gun, then use it to kill a man they did not know? Why? Simply, why did they do it? I remember staring at them angrily as they came into the courtroom after first being charged. Now, 20 months have passed. The driver, Michael Jones, has admitted his guilt and was sentenced to life. He'll be in his late 50s before he can even apply for parole. James Edwards Jr. was in the front seat and was 15 at the time. He may get a deal of 20 years jail and 20 years probation for turning state's witness. Now, finally, a guilty verdict and sentence for the shooter. 17-year-old Chauncey Luna will get life with no chance of ever being released. If Luna was 18 when he committed the crime, he'd potentially have faced the death penalty. But it doesn't change the fact that Chris Lane is dead and four lives have been wasted. This past week, the Lane family, parents Peter and Donna, his sister and other relatives, as well as the Harper family, sat just metres away from Chauncey Luna in the Duncan courthouse. This random and reckless shooting has raised a lot of issues for me about America's gun culture. Living here, it feels not a day goes by when there isn't another senseless shooting of some sort. But Chris Lane's father, Peter, said within days of his son's death that, amongst other issues, he wasn't going to, quote, buy into gun control, and his position hasn't changed. So when I finally met him in the courthouse, I didn't raise it with him. Given the nature of the gut-wrenching testimony and graphic photos, I did want to know how he and his family were coping and whether they wanted or needed to sit through it all.
Obviously, you know, to, I won't say participate in the trial because that's not the right word, but to see a conclusion, hopefully, to support the Harpers. I mean, they've been so strong and so good all the way through. And to stand up for Chris. I mean, that's, I suppose, the reasons you do these things, is to make sure everybody knows that you're still involved in trying to improve the life. You know, it's just something you have to do, I suppose.
I can't imagine what it was like for you to have to sit through some of this very graphic evidence. Do you think that, I mean, did you wish you could have left the courtroom for some of that?
We had that option. We don't have to be here. We got a bit of a briefing early in the week about what was going to be presented, and we had a choice to stay or to go, but none of what went up represented Chris as a human being. I mean, it was just evidence in court. I mean, Chris as a human being was vibrant, alive, engaging, just a really nice kid. So that was just pictures. That's not nothing to do with him as a person.
These are just cold, hard facts.
Well, they are now. You know, Chris's spirit's with me wherever I go.
Every time you play baseball?
Yeah, every time you do anything. I mean, we used to do a lot of driving in the car to his games. So you remember, I mean, even just having a drive, you can think of a conversation you have. You can pass a point and laugh at something you said or he said. You don't have to deal with those things as, you know, that was nothing to do with him. I mean, he just went for a run. So I can deal in the process that this is just evidence in court. It doesn't represent any way the spirit that was Chris.
Does it help at all in the healing process?
I'm sure it does, but exactly where? This is a time thing. You evolve, the situation evolves, the people around you evolve, so while it will be healing, as I said, it's kind of a conclusion of this would remove something hanging over your head, and it's not a case of moving on, because I think we've all done very well in getting on with our lives and living good lives, but it still sits there as a cloud, so to have a resolution in this area would be good.
Do you talk to other parents who've been in the same situation as you?
I've spoken to a couple who've lost kids, and, you know, every loss is tragic and everyone is different and everybody has the right to deal with it differently. There's not a right or a wrong about how you go with this. And the thing that I would say is you just can't hang on to it. I mean, you can't let anger in this environment hurt the rest of your life. So once this is done, I won't be giving those kids 3 seconds thought of my life.
Be accused.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't need to think about them. They're absolutely nothing of any good in my life, so I'm not going to waste time on them.
What are you going to focus your time on in terms of how you remember your son and how you help other people deal with similar situations?
Oh, look, I'm not aiming to help other people. I mean, if people want to talk to me, I'm happy to talk, but this is a personal thing, and my way won't be the right for other people. I mean, I'm happy to talk and give people time, but how I deal is different to how Donna's dealing, is how different to the girls are dealing, it's different to how Sarah's dealing, how the Harpers are dealing, but everybody's hanging together, everybody's looking out for each other, everybody's...
Between you all, you do talk a lot, you do share a lot, you
do come... Look, and I mean, there's silliness too. I mean, we're not, you know, all sitting around being morose.
No, but that's what I mean, you do...
Oh, well, look, as I said, that's since Chris got killed, we've had grandkids, we've had a wedding... You know, you've got to have a life, and everybody's entitled to be happy and to try to be happy. So, you know, we have good days and bad days like everybody, but I have tremendous people supporting me. I've got, you know, my partner Sue in Adelaide just looks after me so well. So, you know, we all have good support structures, strong families, good people, and if you surround yourself with good people, well, you get looked after.
I've been to Duncan here 3 times, and every time I still can't make sense of any of this. I don't know that even the trial has helped me make sense of any of this. I don't think, for you, I mean, does it make any sense to you?
No, it never will. I mean, you could what-if this to death. If Chris went for the run 10 minutes later, if he went 10 minutes earlier, if he'd run a different direction, if he'd...
What the bloody hell were those kids thinking?
Look, I don't go there. I don't, as I said to you, I don't give them the time of day. I don't give them a thought process. You know, the way I was brought up, the way I brought my kids up, this is just so foreign that I don't try and understand it. I don't try and understand it.
But for you now, getting on with your life, supporting your family, supporting the Harper family, looking for the positives, sharing a lot of love amongst those two families, that'll be for it.
Yeah, oh, look, Sarah's one of us. I mean, that's as simple as it is. And you know, we're part of them and they're part of our family. So I have no doubt at all that this is, you know, lifelong. And when you talk of me supporting people, I mean, there's a hell of a lot of people support me. So there's the whole baseball community in Victoria, the Masters guys I play with, the Essendon Baseball Club, the Watsonia Baseball Club. I mean, I could just go on and on, and, you know, it's family, family, family. And that's what keeps you strong and lets you get up and put a foot in front of the other, because, you know, there's so many good people, you know, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, cousins. I mean, it just goes on and on. And in Duncan, it's the same, that the extended family's here, they're standing up for each other. So Cindy and Randy, their brothers, their sisters, they're all here, they're all saying, okay, what can we do? And it's the same for the Duncan community. We've had food delivered, we've had accommodation provided, we've had transport provided. So all we've had to do is come here and focus on looking after each other and getting on with this process. But it's absolutely nothing to do with the people of Duncan or the people of the US. This is just an aberration by some people, and it's not a reflection of this community at all.
I think I've asked everything I wanted to ask. I was going to ask about baseball. Do you want... I mean, would you like to see some baseball scholarships in your son's name? Would you like to see, you know, a baseball tournament named after your son? Is there anything else?
No, well, the Major League's doing the field down at Essendon in conjunction with some stuff. There's ECU's got a scholarship. There's one in Duncan. There's some other stuff happening. So it's difficult because this isn't a tragedy with a message. I mean, as I said to you last night when we were just talking, I mean, this wasn't a one-hit, you know, like the Sammy Tadeh Foundation in South Australia, which does some wonderful work. That's an easy message. Don't get drunk and hit a kid. There's no message here. You're an athlete and you go for a run. So there's lots being done around the place, ECU, Redlands, back in Melbourne, and it's all good, but it's not something that, you know, you want to live every day. It's just something that you deal with and you remember forever, but you've still got to do a move on and have a happy life, and that's the aim. Get on and get a happy life.
We will remember it forever. Thank you, Peter.
Okay, mate. Thank you.
And that's Peter Lane, Chris's father, speaking there to our North America correspondent, Michael Vincent. Staying in the US, where there was fear and loathing this week as Americans rushed to make the tax year deadline. And this year, the deadline came with more calls to abolish the unpopular Internal Revenue Service. The IRS, as it's known, is an easy punching bag for a lot of Americans, and this year the stories have focused on the millions of dollars spent by the agency on office furniture and the length of time it takes to even get through on the helpline. North America correspondent Lisa Miller reports from Washington.
Welcome to the Internal Revenue Service.
For anyone leaving their tax return until the last minute, finding help on the phone was frustrating to say the least.
Due to high demand, you may experience longer than usual wait times.
The tax commissioner said the average call waiting time was 30 minutes, but in terminology that you can only smile about, they had 6 million courtesy disconnects, which means the tax department hung up on 6 million callers because they were waiting too long. April the 15th is tax day in the US, and the post offices stay open late so you can post-date your return if you've left it too close to the midnight deadline. The tax code in the US is complicated, everyone agrees with that. Reforming it has proved to be a hard ask. Republican presidential candidate Ted Cruz has a simple solution.
Abolish the IRS! Take all 125,000 IRS agents and put them on our southern border.
Another candidate, Rand Paul, delivers his message with some pleasant music in an online video.
It's time to exercise our right to abolish the IRS and preserve our liberty. Call 1-855-455-1199 and sign our historic petition to abolish the IRS and protect your constitutional rights. Demand Congress take immediate action to abolish the IRS and replace it with a simplified, revamped...
The tax department hasn't helped itself at times. In 2010, it was criticised for spending money on a Star Trek spoof video for its training and leadership conference.
Captain, we've uncovered a complex tax evasion scheme using several off-planet accounts. It was a difficult money trail to follow, but in the end, we got it.
What tipped you off, Connor?
An anonymous tweet came in. Amazing what you can catch on Twitter these days, sir.
And this year it's under fire over spending $8,000 on a stair climber, $4.3 million on market research and public opinion polls, and thousands of dollars on decorative and giveaway items like toy footballs and Thomas the Tank Engine rubber wristbands. Republicans accuse the IRS of blowing the money in a hurry before the end of the financial year to ensure their budgets wouldn't be cut next year. At the same time, the commissioner, John Koskinen, has been crying poor, saying the agency has lost $1.2 billion in funding, and that's why they're hanging up on people. He was on Capitol Hill this week asking for more money.
So I am concerned that when I testify next year on the 2016 filing season, the report on the return processing fund may not be as good as it was this year. The employees of the IRS will do everything they can to effectively and efficiently deliver next year's filing season, but we need help.
A former deputy assistant to George W. Bush, Brad Blakeman, told Fox Television there's no excuse for the IRS.
Orrin Hatch sat back and listed for the commissioner all the abuses in spending within his own agency on furniture, on travel, on exercise equipment. The IRS should be treating every dollar with the respect that they accord the taxpayers with. And look, the taxpayers, if they gave the phony excuses that the IRS gives, they'd be liable for penalties and interest and possibly even jail time.
But Bill Gale, the co-director of the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Centre, says calling for the abolishment of the IRS is nonsensical.
Anger at the IRS for the complexity of the tax system is misplaced. The IRS does not legislate the tax code. Congress does. And if the tax code is complicated, that is Congress's fault. The IRS administers the tax system. The IRS would love to have a simpler tax system because it would make it easier for them to administer the system. But they are not the ones that are responsible for the complexity, though.
The IRS got some unexpected support from John Oliver, the host of Last Week Tonight, a comedy-style current affairs show.
Our main story tonight is the IRS. Now, I know that sounds unappealing, but I promise you, if you stay to the end of this, there'll be a very sexy reward. And like clockwork, tax season brings with it an annual gnashing of teeth.
Two dreaded words this time of year, tax time. It is tax day today. Maybe you're holding your nose while finishing up your taxes.
Tax season officially begins, ugh.
Tax season. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Happy tax day, everybody.
And then he called in legendary crooner Michael Bolton to help apologise to the IRS on behalf of all the critics.
I guess you make people angry with the things you do and say, 'cause you make us give our money straight to you. But we need you real bad, though it's clear nobody really likes you.
Michael Bolton saying it with a song. Unfortunately for the IRS, it might take a little more than that to find it some friends by next year's tax deadline.
How are we supposed to live without you? We couldn't functionally survive.
This is Lisa Miller in Washington for Correspondence Report.
That's all from Correspondence Report this week. But before we leave you, here's a taste of a story we'll feature next week. Our Europe correspondent Barbara Miller meets 95-year-old Charles Eugster in between his track meets.
Eugster rises from his blocks in lane number two. It was virtually a standing start. He's quickly upright.
It's a different paced race to the ones Usain Bolt runs, but in its own way, quite remarkable.
It is an economy of effort. It's clearly a tactic to be one-paced through this 200 metres, which...
On the track, 95-year-old Charles Eugster is about to set a British Masters record.
...are on their feet. He crosses the line, does Charles Eugster. It is a new age group world best, 55.48 seconds.
Eugster, a retired dentist, also rose competitively and describes himself as the world's oldest bodybuilder. He has an agent, a Facebook page and a Twitter account, and he's given a TEDx talk in his native Switzerland, where he espoused the benefits of remaining fit and active in old age.
Retirement is not the end. It can be a new beginning, a chance. A chance to build a new body, develop dormant talents and start a new life for the next 30 years.
I feel rejuvenated just listening to that. That's Charles Eugster next week on Correspondence Report. Don't miss him. That's all from CR for this week. Thanks for your company. Back to you now, Jonathan.